This is 89.9 WWNO. I'm Janae Pierre, and it's time for All Things New Orleans. On today's show, we'll chat with Lane Kaplan Levinson, host of Tripod New Orleans at 300, just weeks before the launch of the podcast's third season. We'll also talk about a bike ride that goes from NOLA to Angola. And don't forget, Saturday is Election Day. We'll share the Secretary of State's projections on voter turnout and more. That's all coming up on All Things New Orleans. Stay with us. WWNO's history podcast, Tripod New Orleans at 300, returns in just 2 weeks. Host Lane Kaplan Levinson traveled to Haiti this past summer and will launch the third season on October 27th with an hour-long special about the relationship between Haiti and New Orleans. I sat down with Lane to get a sneak peek of this Tripod special. Hey, Lil Lane.
Hey, Janae, how's it going?
Everything's good. It's always great to join you in studio. You've been working on a big documentary, and word on the street is that it'll be airing later this month on October 27th.
Yes, that's right. So I have been working on this hour-long special about the historical connection between these two places, New Orleans and Haiti, and a look at what has happened to that relationship over time. 200 years ago, these two places had this huge intersection where lots of people migrated from Haiti to New Orleans. And this really started after the Haitian Revolution. So early 1800s, a lot of people left Haiti when Haiti became independent from the French colony, and they went to New Orleans. And actually, in 1809, 10,000 people fled Haiti and ended up in New Orleans. And that same year, there had only been 10,000 people in New Orleans, period. And so almost overnight, this large Haitian migration doubled the population of the city.
And Lane, it just dawned on me that maybe I should have shared this information with you, but on my father's side, there are some Haitian roots in my family.
Are you serious?
I'm so serious.
You're just explaining this to me, right? You're just deciding that this is a nice time to tell me this?
I'm just thinking about it like you just mentioned it, and I'm like, yeah, that's my people.
Janae, I should have been interviewing you for the past 4 months. Thanks
well,
a lot.
Well, no, I don't know much. It's something that we know. However, I haven't studied or went back to look at the root of it all.
Right.
But yeah, that's why it's, as a New Orleanian, I guess that's why it's so personal for me, at least.
Right, and that's exactly what I've learned doing this documentary and learning this story, is that it's personal to so many people in New Orleans, but it's still a little bit of a foreign topic. It's like, you know that there's this relation, but you don't actually know that much more beyond that. And that's what we talk about here. And at the same time, you know, Haiti did have this huge influence on New Orleans when all those people came. I want to just introduce to you a few of the characters that you're going to hear in this hour-long special. And what we're talking about reminds me of a geographer that I met outside of Port-au-Prince. His name is Jean-Marie Théoda. And here's what he had to say about Haitians fleeing for New Orleans.
A lot of slaves, a lot of masters escaped from Saint-Domingue, went to Louisiana, and they created a Creole culture. I mean, when I listen to your music and sometimes taste to your cook, I said, this is ours.
So when he says Saint-Domingue, just for people that don't know, Saint-Domingue was the name of the colony before Haiti became independent and shed the colonial name Saint-Domingue and was an independent country called Haiti. So that's what he means there. And that's what he's saying, you know, that these two places have this really similar culture in our food, you know, in our music, that this is this Creole culture that comes largely from this major migration of people from Haiti to New Orleans.
So I know you mentioned that he's a geographer, but are other people in Haiti talking about New Orleans the way people in New Orleans are talking about Haiti?
That's a really, really good question. The average Haitian doesn't really know about this connection at all between New Orleans and Haiti. And I go up and kind of approach random strangers in parks in Haiti, you know, and ask them about this. everywhere we went, we got mostly the same response.
No.
No, no.
No?
No, 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 no.
No.
No. En réalité, non.
Okay, merci en pile.
They've never even heard of New Orleans, period.
Wow. So, I mean, what do the Haitians have to say about New Orleans and Haitian connections drifting apart?
There are a lot of thoughts about, you know, why we've kind of drifted apart as two territories and what that looks like today. So I'm going to introduce you to another person that's in the documentary. His name is Lionel Pressoir. He runs a tour agency in this city called Pétionville. It's really close to Port-au-Prince, but it's a little bit more upscale. It stuck in my mind how he described New Orleans and Haiti and where they are today. So here's Lionel.
There's not the contact that I thought there was between Haiti and New Orleans. But we're looking for it. We need it.
This is a general response that I got from a lot of people in Haiti, is that the way that New Orleans tends to look back on the relationship and potentially romanticize this relationship and romanticize the Haitian influence is in the past. Like you said, you know that your great-great-grandparent has Haitian roots, but mm-hmm. it's not a current part of your life. It's not something that is active, so to speak. And so the need that I think Lionel is talking about is not for Haiti to say, hey, help us. It's just saying, if you want to talk about this relationship, let's actually maintain it. Let's actually do something about these ties so that we're not just looking back, but that we're continuing to cross paths.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you find out why that connection hasn't been maintained?
Yeah, so that's another big piece of this. You know, the documentary, it's split into three parts, and part two is all about missed connections, essentially, like what happened. And there's this guy that I met in Port-au-Prince. He's a businessman. His name is Vladimir Laborde. He talked about all these types of reasons. You know, some of them are pretty straightforward. Jobs, you know, I hate to say it for either of us, Janae, and anyone listening, but New Orleans is not number one when it comes to a job opportunity mm-hmm. in the United States. And so Haitians over the course of the 20th century that are leaving Haiti to go to America, they're going to New York. They're going to Boston. Yeah. They're going to Miami, bigger cities that
bigger
have
opportunities.
More opportunity. And that's just a pretty straightforward reason. But then there's this other thing that came up in almost all of my interviews.
We have bad press.
That's businessman Vlad Laborde saying we, as in Haiti, have bad press. He says a lot of the reasons why these connections haven't been maintained, these connections between New Orleans and Haiti, is because of how Haiti is portrayed in the media. Mm. You know, when you think about Haiti, what do you think about?
Looters were running rampant in Port-au-Prince Thursday as earthquake survivors have become even more desperate for food, water, and any kind of aid.
Meanwhile, in Haiti, the earthquake back in January has led to a deadly epidemic of cholera. And today,
with the smell of death and the stink of smoke, downtown Port-au-Prince now feels like a war zone. Gangs
with machetes. It's not, you know, a glowing endorsement of come on down and visit Haiti.
Now, what can New Orleanians who are interested in reestablishing that connection, what can those folks do to kind of make other people see Haiti in a different light?
Part three of the documentary talks about what we can do, right? Ways that it's not just this thing we talk about, but it's something that we're involved in. And there's a bunch of different things on the plate here. I mean, one is tactile. When I went down to Haiti, there were so many cities that looked so similar to New Orleans, it was really, really overwhelming. You know, we have this same colonial architecture.
This stretch right here really looks like New Orleans with these doors. Uh-huh.
And if you look at our French Quarter, yes, the whole thing is under construction right now, but it's also because we're constantly restoring and repairing this, you know, 200-300-year-old architecture that we have. Haiti has the same architecture, and it's crumbling. You know, it has not been maintained. And we in New Orleans actually have specialists and architects and restoration artists that know how to preserve all of this particular design.
I know little teeny hardware details and woodwork details that I saw in Cape Haitian that are exactly copied in the French Quarter.
One thing is, hey, why don't we send some of the architects that are fixing our French Quarter every other week mm-hmm. and go down to cities like Port-au-Prince, cities like Cap Haitien in the north of Haiti, cities like Jacmel in the south of Haiti, and restore and preserve some of this shared architecture, you know?
Yeah. Hopefully we can see something like that happen.
Totally. And again, I think on the more meta level, going back to this idea of Haiti having bad press, the person that I'm thinking of that spoke on this is the former prime minister of Haiti. Her name is Michelle Pierre-Louis. I met her in Port-au-Prince, and she says, you know, it's important for the people around the world and for the people in Haiti to have a different image of this country. So here is the former prime minister, Michelle Pierre-Louis.
I mean, we need to make an effort to show the better part of this country, which exists, and the people, you know, the people. Because we don't have just drug dealers and bad politicians. We have Haitians that are great, that are artists, that are creative, and that, you know, live with dignity.
So, you know, that's the former prime minister saying, hey, New Orleans, you might love to talk about Haiti and its influence, but, you know, that doesn't really do anything for how the rest of the United States perceives the Haiti of today. So come actually explore and experience the Haiti of today to spread a more honest and more holistic message of what this country is all about.
Well, listen, I know I'm looking forward to listening to it, and I know all of your tripodders, I'm calling them tripodders, I did it, but I'm sure they're looking forward to it as well.
Send us your tripodder.
Send us your tripodder look.
Your tripodder look, yes.
So again, Lane, when can people expect to hear this?
Yes, so this is premiering, world premiere, on WWNO on Friday, October 27th at 1 p.m. And then obviously at that point, you can just find it on your trusty podcast listening app and listen to it however and whenever you want, Janae.
All right. Well, thanks, Lane. I'll tripod you later.
Oh.
I got it. Don't miss the premiere broadcast of Tripod's hour-long special, Haiti and New Orleans, is The Feeling Mutual, on Friday, October 27th at 1 p.m. More information at WWNO.org. Friday morning, over 50 bicyclists will pedal from New Orleans all the way to the Louisiana State Penitentiary. Why would they decide to do that? Joining me now to talk more about the 2017 NOLA to Angola bike ride is Noam Beck. Noam, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So go ahead and tell us about NOLA to Angola and the purpose behind this bike ride.
So NOLA to Angola has been now going on for 7 years, and it's a 170-mile bike ride that starts at OPP, Orleans Parish Prison, here in New Orleans, and then follows the river up to Angola. And the ride was originally thought up as a way to support the transportation needs of families and friends who want to visit their loved ones around the state. One of the ways that the incarceration system in Louisiana manifests is that prisons are really far-flung all over the state. And so there's a group called Cornerstone Bus Project that for years has been providing free bus rides for folks to visit their loved ones. And some organizers many years back saw that work and knew that they could use some financial support and so put this bike ride together to fundraise for them.
Go ahead and tell us more about Cornerstone's Builders Bus Project.
So it's a small operation. They run seasonal bus rides, I think monthly bus rides for families out of New Orleans to a few different prisons around the state. And it's a fantastic organization run by a reverend and his wife, and also pretty underfunded and is an organization that could use a lot of support. And
yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like an initiative that's not so cheap.
No, it's not cheap, and I think something that often flies under the radar. And so NOLA to Angola is actually like a pretty large portion of their annual funding. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why we take this so seriously.
Now, I'm told that you're not a founding member of NOLA to Angola, mm-hmm. but tell us how you got involved.
So I did the ride last year for the first time. At the time, I was doing some organizing around the prison system and had spent a lot of time in prisons around the state. And I was driving 3 hours, 4 hours up to Monroe and Shreveport, and to see for myself the distance that you have to travel as someone who is being paid to do that work, I can only imagine what it's like for families and friends who want to see their loved ones and maintain those bonds and the sense of relationship that is so important to all of us. The key pieces of being in a human relationship is being able to see each other and, you know, be able to talk. And so it seemed like just a fantastic way, a really tangible way to plug in and support the communities around our state and here in New Orleans.
And are those thoughts of one of the many things going through your mind during the bike ride? How is that experience?
So I had never, you know, I think the longest I had ridden before last year in one go was, you know, maybe 5 or 6 miles. So probably the biggest thing going through my head is how am I going to make it through 2.5 days?
But, yeah.
There's so much support going on in that community. There's a lot of riders, but there's also a pretty large community of folks who are supporting the ride, logistics and food, and then obviously the even larger community of people that are funding it. So the sort of just like camaraderie and playfulness that courses through the ride is really fun. And then they also sort of do popular education pieces throughout the ride.
Okay.
As we're biking through parts of Louisiana that may be new to a lot of us, learning about the ways that those places intersect with the criminal justice system in different ways. And so, yeah, so there's constantly learning happening and thinking about the justice system, but in a community context that really feels supportive and loving too.
Now, you mentioned the camaraderie on this bike ride, but did you drag anyone with you last year to tag along?
Yeah, so my dad did it with me last year, got him on the ride and had him sign up again this year. My mom actually got on the ride as well, but she wasn't able to do it. So my dad and I will be doing it again for the second year. We were, I think, the only father-son duo last year. And so I've been told have inspired a few other father-son and daughter-father duos. Maybe next year we'll do the tandem bike, but for now we're just riding solo on bikes.
Nice. It sounds like you guys belong on an Amazing Race.
Yeah, supporting prison transportation around the country.
Absolutely. So I understand that the registration for the bike ride is now closed, right? Mm-hmm. You have your friend Michael in town who is also interested in riding. Is there some type of wait list that people like Michael may be on?
So there is a wait list. I've been told the wait list is now closed and I don't think they're accepting folks off the wait list any longer. It actually fills up. It's incredible how popular this ride is. The registration started, I think, in July and it fills up within days. So the best way to support it now is we still have our fundraising page open online, and folks, if they want to donate, can donate. I think we just reached our fundraising goal, but that by no means means that we're done fundraising.
How do folks keep up with NOLA to Angola outside of this bike ride? This only happens once a year, but I'm sure you guys have a bunch of other things going on throughout the year.
So we've got a cool website with all sorts of information about NOLA to Angola, and then some of the organizers also put together a weekly newsletter about sort of happenings going around the city, around the criminal justice system. So not even specifically stuff that NOLA to Angola is organizing, but just the larger community folks that want to get the word out on events happening. Sometimes job postings are posted there, different community events or actions that are happening. So anyone who wants to get plugged into the justice scene here is definitely should sign up for the newsletter.
Michael, as we mentioned, you're on the waiting list. Why is it so important for you to be part of this bike ride?
Something that I have really appreciated over the course of the last year with my friendship with Noam is his ability to educate not just me, but so many others about the issues of incarceration facing the state of Louisiana and the country as a whole. As someone who's not directly involved in this kind of work or organizing, I've just very much appreciated that education and through, you know, the sharing of resources like the newsletter, which I'll also say as someone who recently arrived in New Orleans, it's been an incredible resource just to get to know the organizing that's going on in the city and also the issues facing the state. And so it's been a really eye-opening experience for me. It sort of feels like a way to get involved in certain aspects of this new community, not just be a visitor, tourist, but try to be a little more involved in certain actions if I can while I'm here.
Yeah. He's a good spokesperson. We'll get him on the ride next year.
Definitely. That was Noam back with the NOLA to Angola bike ride. Thanks for joining me today.
Yeah, thank you.
The long-distance ride takes place Friday at 8 a.m. with a send-off and press conference at the New Orleans Municipal Court. Saturday is Election Day here in Louisiana. All 64 parishes statewide have the treasurer's race and 3 constitutional amendments on the ballot. Additionally, New Orleans has high-profile municipal races, including mayor and city council. Joining me now to urge folks to partake in their civic duty is Meg Sundstrom, press secretary for the Secretary of State's office. Meg, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. How many people are projected to come out and vote this weekend?
So usually what we do is we look at historical data. So we look at similar elections to the election that we're seeing this weekend, meaning mayoral races in the New Orleans area, as well as a statewide special election. And then we also look at early voting totals. So once early voting is complete, we look and see how many people turned out, and that gives us a good idea of what projected turnout will be. Unfortunately, at this point, it's looking like statewide we may not see turnout any higher than 15%. Of course, in New Orleans, it could be higher because of the interest in the mayor and city council races, which are a little bit more high profile. But when you blend that in with the rest of the state, again, only reaching 15% is what the numbers are telling us, although we hope that this weekend people will change their mind and get out and vote and hopefully prove us wrong in that analysis.
Early voting wrapped up last weekend. What can you tell us about the number of people who came out to do that?
We had about 92,000 people early vote throughout the state for early voting. Again, it was busy that first Saturday, and then unfortunately, the second Saturday is when we were watching Hurricane Nate come ashore, so we had to close early voting in several parishes around the New Orleans area, so they saw a downturn in early voting on that Saturday. In Orleans Parish, we had about 15,600 people early vote. We usually see about 10 to 15% of the electoral grouping come out for early voting. People really do like it as a convenient way to vote on their time.
Yeah, definitely. Now, if we look at the ballot statewide, Louisiana voters are being asked once again to alter the state constitution. Let's talk about the three constitutional amendments on the ballot.
Sure. So there are three constitutional amendments that every voter in the state will have the opportunity to vote on. One is a property tax exemption for construction materials on homes. The second one is a property tax exemption for first responders' spouses who the first responder dies in the line of duty. And the last one creates a new transportation fund for the building of roads and other transportation projects throughout the state. So those three constitutional amendments, again, will be on everyone's ballot in the state, and then about 12 parishes. That plus the treasurer's race is the only thing on their ballot.
Okay. Now, Meg, I must admit, when I'm in the voting booth, I have to read the amendments about three times to really understand it. But folks like me can get an early look at the ballot before going to the polls. Tell us how we can do that.
You can. There's a number of ways to do it. Of course, you can go to our website, sos.la.gov. That's always an easy way. But my favorite way is to use our GoVote smartphone app. And of course, GoVote is spelled G-E-A-U-X. But all you do is you put in your name, your zip code, or your birthday, and it pulls up your actual ballot. So the ballot that you will see in your precinct on the voting machine where you show up. You can also get turn-by-turn directions to your polling location and watch election results in real time on that app later in the evening. So that app really is helpful if you're kind of an election geek like I am.
Oh, yeah. Listen, it's like the commercial. There's an app for that.
That's right. This one is the app you need for Election Day. And look, with those three constitutional amendments, there's also the Public Affairs Research Center website, which has some analysis, some explanation of those three constitutional amendments, as well as the Council for a Better Louisiana. Those are two really good resources if a voter reads those constitutional amendments ahead of time and still has some questions that they'd like answered.
Mm-hmm. There will likely be a runoff election. Can you tell us when that will be?
So the runoff election will be November 18th. So again, you're right, in most of those larger races, especially mayor, the treasurer's race, we will see runoffs. So that'll be Saturday, November 18th, same hours for the polls to open, 7 a.m. and then close at 8 p.m.
Meg Sundstrom is the press secretary for the Secretary of State's office. Thanks for joining me today.
Thanks so much for having me.
Election Day is this Saturday. Polling places are open from 7 a.m. to 8 p.m. And that's it for this week's edition of All Things New Orleans. I'm Janae Pierre. Follow me on Twitter at Miss Janae Pierre and feel free to tweet comments or questions. Would you like to suggest a guest or topic? Send an email to Janae at wwno.org. That's J-A-N-A-E at WWNO.org. Visit our website to check out previous shows, and be sure to catch us next week, right here on 89.9 WWNO New Orleans and 90.5 KTLN Thibodaux Houma. Thanks for joining us.